You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Twin brothers Craig and Charlie Reed have carved out a unique place for themselves in the music world. More popularly known as the Proclaimers, they have picked up gold and platinum albums in the UK, the US, Canada, and elsewhere. Their hit song, I'm Gonna Be, has practically become a second national anthem in their native Scotland. However, success has not made them tame or indifferent. They have not shied away from aggravating powerful interests like the Labour Party, the Scottish Nationalist Party, or big media. Nor have they been reluctant to lend their name or their time to charities or causes that compel them. Indeed, the brothers see it as an obligation to combine popular music with resolute political advocacy. I spoke with the Proclaimers at last weekend's Vancouver Folk Music Festival, and I began by asking them if they were on the verge of following in the footsteps of fellow musicians like Mick Jagger or U2's Bono. That is, would they soon be granted a knighthood?
I think you're at it, Sean. I think you're at it. They don't hand out knighthoods to committed Republicans, I don't think. Yeah, if they tried, they would tell them where they can stick it. No, the day we take a knighthood is the day that the Rockies finally fall off into the Atlantic, in the Pacific. No, it's not really our scene.
Now, celebrity can often compel artists to sort of tone down their message. Tone down their politics so as to maintain a certain level of popularity. How have you avoided that trap?
Well, for one, I don't think we've, apart from a couple of occasions, we've never kind of had that sustained popularity anyway. You know, it's been a kind of freakish thing when we've had big hits. You know, it's been
but
two or three
never
times.
Had anything from the start.
But we were open about what where our loyalties lay from day one. So it's part of, you know, we write about different subjects, and we'd never say that, certainly say that politics is off limit. Yeah, it has to be a part of it. So I think if you start off that way, and you know why you write political songs, if you do write political songs, then I think you're probably still going to keep doing it.
Speaking of celebrity, your most famous song is I'm Gonna Be. But recently you re-recorded that, or there was a re-recording of that song, is that right? Why did you finally allow for a re-recording of that song?
Because, one, we'd been asked to re-release it three or four times by the record company. We didn't release any point. There was no point in releasing all the stuff, you know. But then when Comet Relief in Britain, the charity in Britain, came to us, Peter Kay, who made the video, he came to us and said, want to use it as the next Comet Relief single, want to do it with Matt Lucas, who's a big Proclaimers fan. And we knew Peter's work was such high quality. We knew it would be good and it would be funny. And that was a reason to do it, you know, and it ended up raising, went to number one 3 weeks, and it ended up raising over £1 million. So it was worth doing. There was a reason to do it. Beforehand, there had been no reason to release it.
Can you explain for listeners in Canada what Comic Relief is exactly?
Comic Relief is a charity that they've run in Britain for maybe 20, 25 years, I think, and it's raised a lot of money over the years for charities in Britain and abroad, a lot of stuff for Africa and that, you know. And it's very successful, and they asked us to get involved. Yeah, Phil, of course you've got to do it, you know. And the record did really well, and it helped a lot of charity work, and it's been a sustained thing in Britain. I think it kind of predates... They're certainly as old as Live Aid or any of those. I think maybe even predates it.
It's about the same, time.
But it's carried on, you know, it's just been a kind of hardy annual. It's carried on every year in Britain, and every year or two they release a record, and they kind of use that as a charity single, charity download nowadays, of course. And you pay a bit, and the money goes to charity. So,
speaking of downloads, you just mentioned that. The whole situation for artists has changed now with the internet and all. How can artists survive in this new climate or new environment?
Get on the road. Playing live helps. Certainly doing this, that helps you. If you can't play live, I think you may struggle, you know. I think you just got to keep your eyes on what you're doing and keep you concentrating and be able to play live and be able to adapt. I think that's the same with kind of everybody else, you know. The technology's moving so fast that it's unrecognisable from where it was even 5 years ago, certainly from when we started making records. So I think you just got to adapt and
it's
kind survive.
Of, it's kind of funny when you think a lot of the people over the years that I really liked, some of them sold a lot of records and some of them sold nothing, you know. A lot of the old folk and country and blues guys and even rock and roll guys maybe had one or two big hit records or not even that, and then they spent the rest of their life on the road. but they were still great, and they still wrote songs that meant a lot to me. And some of these guys never had any success, so I kind of think you do this because you want to do it. Like my kid, my youngest kid is into playing and stuff, and he's like, oh, maybe make a career out of it. And I said, well, you don't really think about making a career out of it, you should just think about playing, express yourself, enjoy it. And if something turns into a part-time career or a full-time career, then that's great, that's fantastic. But you should play because you enjoy it. You should go on the road because you want to play to the people. It shouldn't be to make money, it should because you want to play to people. And then hopefully, hey, so somebody buys you your dinner and pays the hotel room, great.
Let's go back a little. You guys are from Leith, is that right?
Well, originally born there, but I mean, we didn't really live there. We moved about a lot as kids and grew up in Cornwall in the southwest of England. And then we moved up and really spent most of our childhood in Fife, which is kind of just over the water from Edinburgh. You know, it's about the village we grew up in was like 50 miles up the road from Edinburgh. So that's where we kind of, the formative years, you know.
One of the reasons I thought you guys were from Leith, or I just assumed it, was because you were born in Leith, is because there's an occasional reference to the local football team, or as we say here, soccer team, Hibs. But speaking broadly, there seems to be, and I think there's you guys have had said something to the effect that big time sports is really kind of a distraction. Why do people need these distractions?
It's exciting, you know, let's be honest, professional sports, whether it's soccer or baseball or hockey or whatever, you know, and when you've got something like you've got in Britain where football is ingrained in the national psyche, it's absolutely ingrained and people understand the same way that hockey is here. It's exciting and it's a great thing to do, and it's great people playing, it's good to support local teams, and I'm all for that. But I think it's taken on an importance in the last 20 years that it never had before. It was never that much devoted in the papers to sport. It's become like show business, you know, the actual news in papers has got smaller and smaller, and the show business and the music and the sport has just got bigger and bigger.
To sell newspapers, the quality of journalism has gone down, you know, and it's now, I think there's still great journalists out there and there's still great stories being uncovered, but they're getting pushed off the headlines by sports stars and Paris Hilton. You know, and apparently that's what people want, so there you go. You know.
Now, you guys have been very outspoken in your criticism of the Britain's involvement in the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war. How did people react to your stance in England and in Scotland?
I think they probably knew, if they knew anything about us, they probably knew where we stood anyway. And if they didn't, well, we gave an opinion. And truthfully, our opinion was the opinion of at least half the population anyway.
This is the thing. I mean, if you were out and you know what you were saying, we would still say it if it was a view shared by 10 or 15 or 20% of people.
It's not a controversial.
You know, it isn't really that controversial, but a lot of people have been against them. A lot of people have been for. That's fair enough. It's a debate. It's a democracy. You should speak and have a debate. That's a sign of a healthy society, not an unhealthy one. Unhealthy society is where they drag you off to prison because you disagree with them. I think our opinion is probably shared by the majority now in Britain.
Are you glad to see the back of Tony Blair?
Very glad to see the back of him. I think he's... I wasn't that keen on the front of him, you know. I mean, I think I've got to say I had his number from day one before he ever became Prime Minister. He just actually was a lot worse than I thought, but I knew he was bad. I think the man was atrocious. I think he's got basically something. He thinks he's got a direct line to God. I think even more than George Bush did. I think Blair is scary, and I'm glad he's out of the way. But Gordon Brown has screwed up incredibly badly since he's got there, and Labour will lose the next election very heavily, and they'll probably lose the one after that. But they had the good years, didn't they? Same as the Tories had 18 years, you know, and they were all making money and they were all successful. And Labour's had 12, 13 years now, and they've been very successful, and it's coming to an end.
I've not given up on him. He's going to solve the peace problem. He's going to solve the problem as the Arab-Israeli conflict now. Apparently, after years of following America's line on the Middle East, he now is supposed to be considered a fair broker, you know. I think the Arab world may disagree somehow.
We're not barbarians. We've learned from history. This is a little tongue-in-cheek line from one of your songs. What should we learn from history?
I think we should learn that if you get kicked out of Afghanistan three times, if you go in a fourth time, you're going to get the same result. The Americans haven't been there, so they don't know.
We learned it, the French learned it, the Russians learned it, and the Americans are going to learn it now. And Britain, for Britain of all countries, to go in there, it's three times we got kicked out of Afghanistan, and we were stupid enough to go in a fourth time.
They beat the Red Army, they eventually kicked Alexander the Great out. You know, these guys are not amateurs. They are, you know, they're kind of, I was thinking there's a real, you know, there's a kind of real parallel between them and the early Scots who drove the Romans out, because they were... They took to the hills, they hit them in raiding parties, and eventually they drove the occupying power out. And that apparently is what they're going to do with us. I mean, you see the amount of Canadian guys that's been killed again this week, 15 British guys killed in the last 2 weeks. You could cry. Really, it is a bloody disgrace. And I wish I could think that there was some way we would win it, but I don't think there is. And my opinion is a fight. If you've got a fight to the death and you do it, you don't send guys into a war that isn't a fight to the death for your own country if you don't have to. And that's why I despair of why we're there now. I understand why people thought it was a good idea, but they're going to have to leave, and they're going to leave with their tails between their legs, and it's going to probably end up worse. And I would say Iraq's possibly the same situation as well. I think the unitary state of Iraq will not survive the departure of the American soldiers. And I'll put a pound to a penny, there'll still be American soldiers in Iraq in 10 or 15 years' time. They won't all get away.
This is your first Vancouver Folk Festival. What's your impression?
Fantastic. Really, I mean, I'm glad it's a beautiful sunny day, because the last time we played a festival over in this corner of Canada was Victoria about 9 years ago, and it was hissing down all day, but I have to say the audience stayed there and they lapped it up, and it was fantastic. But it's great having this. I mean, the situation, that view for the main stage, I think is the best I've ever seen from any stage anywhere at any festival. And it's a lovely place, and it's lovely people, and I'm just glad that it's such a great day as well.
I think in this weather, it must be, I'm not putting you on, it must be one of the, if not the best city in the world, one of the top one or two, three cities in the world when it's like this. It's just immaculate, really.
You were on stage today with Dick Gauguin and a few others doing a kind of workshop. How did you like that?
I did like it. It's the first time we've ever done it, you know, and we kind of knew roughly what it was going to be, but you don't know until you've actually done it, you know, how it's going to work out. But I thought it was very relaxed. I think all the different singers kind of complemented each other, you know, that there wasn't anything that kind of sounded the same. So I thought it was great. He really enjoyed it, and the crowd was very receptive, and they listened, and they got the jokes, and they got the serious bits. So yeah,
thank you guys.
Thank you.
And that was Craig and Charlie Reed, better known as the Proclaimers. I interviewed them last week at the Vancouver Folk Music Festival. Their most recent album is entitled Notes and Rhymes, and you can learn more about them by going to their website at proclaimers.co.uk.